everybody, welcome back to the IL Pro Lacrosse Podcast. I think we're sticking with that name. I am Kyle Devitt, the Gear and Lifestyle Editor at Inside Lacrosse, and today I am joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside Lacrosse freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Yes, indeed. We have three PLL games to discuss, and looking at my notes here, Chris, it looks like just one MLL game. Is that correct?
That is correct. One game. Everybody else took the week off and hung out in their respective neighborhoods and did community service and stuff like that. I think I saw a bunch of tweets about that, coaching clinics or whatever. And we just had one. So should we just hop into it now?
Yeah. I how long did it take you to realize it was just one? Because it was like half an hour of searching for me. How did you come to that conclusion?
It took a very long time because I didn't know that heading into the weekend. So it was a lot of looking and then relooking and trying to convince myself that, no, there's got to be at least one other. But no, everybody take a break this weekend.
All right, well, one game for the MLL. This week is Chris's MLL week, so we'll let Chris take it away, even though obviously I also watched this game. Tell us about Bayhawks Lizards.
Bayhawks 16, Lizards 14. It was up in New York in Lizards territory. Let's go quick summary here. So game starts off. Actually, the Lizards are the early aggressors. Might not have seen that coming, but yeah, they came out super strong. Rob Pinnell broke out his, you know, kind of patented question mark jump shot. Unfortunately, did not work out great for him. Took a serious shot to the crotchular region. Our thoughts are with you, Rob, at this time. We hope you're feeling good. He came back stronger than ever, though, so I guess he shook it off like a champ. Kind of started running the offense, and the offense looked solid, or maybe the Chesapeake defense was scrambling. Maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. But the Lizards come firing. Dylan Malloy not at the game. I'm watching the game thinking maybe this is part of the reason why he ended up not sticking with the PLL. Maybe he had some commitments. I don't know if this is going to be his only game that he misses or what his schedule is like, but he wasn't there. And so I think that kind of gave the Lizards, well, it forced them to. I was going to say gave them an opportunity, but it definitely forced them to kind of cycle in some new attackmen, try to get some new looks, see who was working well with Rob Pinnell. Plus, they had some midfielders like Kevin Crowley, I think, stood out to me, really from a sort of distributor standpoint as one of their top midfielders in this game. Nicky Galasso continued this season kind of being a solid, you know, once he's in there consistently, that had kind of been the issue years past. You see him for a game and then not for the next one. But he's been a steady contributor as well. So finally, second half, game's tied 9-9 heading into the third quarter. But then Lyle Thompson basically just takes over and destroys everybody. And, you know, not to summarize this up too much, but yeah, that's basically what he did. We're talking about goal, assist, maybe hockey assist goal, something like that. Low angle, up top, whatever, you name it, he did it. And when the smoke cleared, that's how you got Bayhawks 16, Lizards 14. Kyle, question for you.
Yes.
Did you actually learn anything from this game, or was this basically all you expected it to be? Like, does Chesapeake's status change, or is this just something they were supposed to win?
Well, it's interesting. I think that the one thing I learned is that MLL is so far behind PLL for production that it's, like, infuriating at this point. Because when you go from watching PLL directly into MLL, you see all of the bad edits, all of, like, the garbage camera work, and all of, like, the things that make MLL look and feel slower to the viewer. And they were highlighted in this game, probably because it was the only game. And also, it took a while for me to find, so I was upset when I was already watching it that it took me a while. But it's so apparent that that's one of the other... Put the play aside. The way it's presented is so inferior to PLL. And MLL people will... They can't deny that, honestly. The production is bad, period. And I was told that they hired a clean house in that front office. I was told they were going to fix everything, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? Been told that before. and it didn't happen then, and it didn't happen now. So they have a lot of catching up to do as far as what the PLL puts out as a visual product and for, like, at-home viewers at least. But in terms of the teams playing on the field, you know, I feel like the Lizards kind of choked this one away. I really do. I thought that they, you know, they at one point they had a lead there, and they just couldn't keep it. And I knew the second time that Chesapeake tied them in the second half that they were going to take it. And they did. And they did it with a Matt Abbott running around, getting slashed kind of ending, which is like almost vintage Bayhawks. And I did enjoy it. And you were right to highlight Lyle. Classic Lyle performance. Unbelievable. Just showed that he's one of the best players in the world once again.
Yeah, touching on a couple of those things, I'll kind of go backwards. Matt Abbott is basically, he's kind of like, as far as lacrosse goes, he's basically the closest thing we have to a relief pitcher in that sense. They just, anytime he's playing, I remember during the USA tryout, they did the same thing. You just, okay, we got a minute left on the clock. Here, Matt, go run around and kill this clock. And he just always comes through and delivers and, you know, draws some flags like he did in this situation. As far as the comparison, which I hadn't remembered until you started talking about it, yeah, the way this game was set up schedule-wise is, yeah, it was literally right after the PLL games. So, yeah, you're watching one and then just literally flipping to the next game. Which is a weird sort of situation. They've had some overlaps and sort of things like that spread out. But this was just, you know, two PLL games and then MLL to close out the night. So, yeah, it was very, very easy to make any sort of contrast between the two products.
How did you feel about Chesapeake after the game, and how screwed are the Lizards for you?
So I felt like Chesapeake was what we thought they were. It really just, I mean, you know, I got to see them on a field with Denver and Atlanta, you know, in the upcoming weeks. But it really just feels like, you know, they enter a situation where they don't have very many questions. You know, so many other teams have these giant, giant questions. And, I mean, the Bayhawks have some, but they're so much smaller. It's like, okay, well, what are our top three defensive guys going to look like? You know, like Jesse Bernhardt returned this week. You know, is he going to be a number one cover guy? Or, you know, is Bernhardt going to be like a two or a three? What's his, you know, injury situation? I knew he wasn't cleared in the first week. So, I mean, they have little sort of roster shuffling questions. They don't really have, like, some of these teams with questions like, you know, how are we going to score goals? You know, like giant, giant, you know, philosophical questions like that. The Lizards, I agree with you. This was a game that they definitely could have won and should have won. But I just feel like the difference between these two teams is the Bayhawks are a team so talented right now that they're going to pull out games that they don't play their best. And maybe they make some mistakes like this one. And I don't think the Lizards, you know, conversely, are in a spot like that. They're in a spot where they're going to have to, you know, do everything perfectly and keep it that way. As far as if they're screwed or not, I mean, I guess I'm going to say just by virtue of being this early in the season, there's time to turn things around. But I don't know what they're going to do, you know, when if Gilmoy, say, he comes back during their next game. You know, what are they going to do with the guys who were in there now? Are they just going back on the bench? Are they going to start running out a second midfield unit that involves them? You know, are they going to start subbing these guys through the box? Mark Matthews was another guy in that attack. There was a while there where I was like, man, Mark Matthews hasn't been doing anything. And so I checked it out. He wasn't on the field. They were just subbing. It's like an NBA team. They just went small. They went with different guys, and he was just on the sideline for whatever reason. Like, is that going to be part of their strategy? I guess maybe they're still in the tinkering stage, and I think maybe it kind of came back to bite them in this one.
Yeah, man, you're 0-3. Time to stop tinkering. Figure it out. Pick a path. I thought Aponte looked good when he was in.
Yeah.
Probably should have played a little bit more. Little Penn State product there. And I thought Nick Spillane probably should have gotten more touches because he was actually beating his guys. I think the main reason that the Lizards lost, though, is because they can't score consistently in any situation. Like, they had three breaks, and they flubbed all three of them at, like, key moments late in the game. And then they chucked it away with a chance to tie it. You can only feel sorry for someone for so long. Also, I don't think many teams have made the MLO playoffs after starting 0-3. So you're already in a hole. It's time to start fixing it and trying to make history. Any other thoughts on this game before we move on?
No, I agree with what you said completely. I'm just looking at some of my notes from the game, and there's a lot of notes here that are just like, botched clear.
Yep.
You know, they just got to tighten up things like that.
Absolutely. Speaking of things that were tightened up, PLL Week 3 had it all, man. Had it all. Two OT games. Another single goal finish. The Atlas finally getting their first win. We got fights. We got long pole goals. We got BTBs all over the place. It was a lot of fun. But we're going to start out with the Chaos 12, Redwoods 11 in OT. Again, Chris, people are out here not talking about Connor Fields as the best attackman in professional lacrosse. Why are the streets not keeping up? Tell me.
The streets are still sleeping on Connor Fields. I got a little theory about this. I think, you know, it's funny you said keeping up, because I think that's kind of the issue. When you look at Connor Fields' resume, the past couple of years, I think the people kind of in that upper tier conversation in both attackability and attack, like attackmen's PR wise, you know, like the big name guys, you know, say you're talking about, you got your Holman, your Jordan Wolf, who's, I guess, less PR wise visible, but pretty explosive on the field that kind of counters that. You got some guys in that tier. People who, you know, had big seasons last year in the pro game, you know, big MLL seasons, world team guys, you know, there was a lot of conversation. You remember how many people were, you know, on Twitter at 2 a.m. or whatever that was, watching the world game. Connor Fields hasn't really had that opportunity, I guess largely because of the injury. And I mean, I'll say 95% because of the injury. So even when we saw him playing with the Hounds, we knew that wasn't real Connor Fields. So he's starting out just so far behind those guys who are always talked about, always recognized. You know, like, how many people know what Marcus Holman looks like versus how many people know, like, Connor Fields looks like, you know, if you see him at a grocery store or something like that. He's got to get opportunities like that as well. Obviously, the play, if it continues like this, his name will keep rising up there and will be mentioned with the greats. But like I said, he's starting behind everybody else.
I mean, is there an attackman that's playing better than him right now, anywhere?
I mean, Lyle was pretty dirty this weekend.
That's fair. All right. I'll give you Lyle.
Right.
Think about that. I'll give you Lyle. What? I'm not giving you anyone else. That's a high bar. That's a high tier of player. And I just think that Fields needs to be recognized for it. He had 4-1 here. Obviously, I think it was Sexton that de-twigged him. And, you know, one of the weird things I think about PLL is they really showcase, like, their stars getting helicoptered, which I think is weird. I think it happens, like, maybe too much to, like, push it out every single time it happens, and it does seem to be happening a lot. I know defensemen need their love. I understand. But I feel like those highlights are getting just as much traction as, like, sick goals. Am I wrong, or is that just, like, a skewed Twitter timeline view of what's going on?
No. I think you are quite right. I think as far as the PLL is concerned, anybody can get it at any time. And if something bad happens to you, they will put you out there on that Summer Jam screen. And if you do something good, then you will get the equal amount of tweet coverage from that. I think they just look at that play, whatever the play is, and they do not care about that name on the back of your jersey.
Yeah, like, I feel bad talking about it at this point, because it's already been talked about a bunch, and you're like, oh, I ain't got to do twigged. That was a great highlight. And it's like, I actually tried not to do that for a long time, but, you know, PLL, keep doing what you're doing, man. Give those defensemen some love. I'm sure the attackmen really appreciate it. But on the other side of the ball here, I want to talk to you about something. How good is Brent Adams on the other side for the Redwoods? He has, the, in my opinion, the perfect skill set to succeed as a two-way mid, in the, like a true two-way mid. I think they throw that around a little too much in the booth, if you know what I'm saying. But at this point, I think Brent Adams might be one of the most valuable players in the entire league in that position. What do you think?
I agree, and I think it is absolutely perfect. He said one of the most valuables. One of the most valuable players. I think the way that it works, I was thinking about Brent Adams during this game. There are good lacrosse players, and there are good PLL players, and I don't think that's going to be a direct overlap.
No.
And Brent Adams is one of those guys who is going to be, you know, obviously keeps the legs going the way they're going, great at playing PLL, which is significantly different. He was good, you know, on a bigger field and stuff like that. But he is just, he knows the code to this sort of game. You know, you shorten the field a little bit. If you can play defense and stay on, you're going to get some serious mismatches. You're going to find yourself playing offense against somebody who is like a pure, pure offensive midfielder and is, you know, scared that he's out there. And it's like, why am I still on the field? And, you know, he's still on the field because they can take advantage of it that way. So, I mean, somebody like Brent Adams is someone who, like, if you were going to do a fantasy draft last year about the PLL, would probably go much lower than if you did it, like, today.
Right. I think one of the other things, too, is, you know, if you're – and we kind of talked about this last week, and I probably came off a little meaner than I meant to, which happens literally all the time. But I was trying to say that tempo players are having a much tougher go in PLL. Like, guys that play all out all the time are the guys that are succeeding, and also the teams that are succeeding. And a team that does that better than any other team in the league, plays that hard and fast speed, is the Chaos. Both sides of the ball, they still give up goals and they still choke on breaks, but they run back or run to the box every single time. There's no, like, jogging. Dudes in a Chaos uniform don't jog, man. They're not jogging. Is that, do you think that's the best attribute of that team right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is their speed, and I think it is their, I'm still fascinated by how they put these teams together, because there's just sort of an undercurrent to these Chaos athletes, you know? And they've all kind of instantly embraced this sort of sentiment that, like, you know, we are going to go at 120 miles an hour all the time. And, you know, maybe you will hit us 10 times, but we are going to hit you 11 and run you over. And, you know, when the smoke clears, we're going to win the game.
Yeah, absolutely. There was also another, shall we say, incident? Is it even an incident where, you know, there was a body slam from Blaze Reardon on Nick Acello. Acello took exception, popped back to his feet, and popped Reardon in the face. A lot of people are mad about this. A lot of people are upset about kind of what it means and what they think it means, and they're reading into it a lot. And we're going to get into that later on, and that's our big question for the week. But give me your immediate reaction to that altercation in real time. What were you thinking when you saw it?
I didn't really think it was that significant. It was just kind of some shoving until the Reardon incident. So I think that's, you know, to sum it up right now, I would say it didn't really seem like anything at all for, you know, 90% of the incident.
Yeah, I think people are maybe overreacting a little bit, but we're going to get there later. Again, this puts Chaos at 2-1 and the Redwoods at 1-2, 3 weeks into the season. We're going to move on to our next game. The Whipsnakes, 11. The Archers, 10. In somehow another OT game. But the OT period in this game is maybe the worst OT period I've ever seen in my life. Turnover, 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 save, turnover, save, turnover. Oh my God, someone please score. And then your boy, Ryan Drenner, pumps and dumps, puts it away on a atrocious blown clear from the Archers there. I don't even know what to say. I don't know what to say. It was definitely worse than the Josh Byrne Chaos winner. What, right? Like, what were your thoughts watching that period? Because it's 12 full minutes. And what's interesting is because the PLL took away those 3 minutes from each quarter, they play 12-minute quarters. If you add all of those 3 minutes that they took away and put them all into overtime, it's 12 minutes. So basically, you're just watching a regular game. And this happens. And it's awful. But someone's got to win. And then Drenner did. What were your thoughts on that?
I agree. The overtime was super, super gross. When I was watching it, I really like that there's no timeout in overtime. I like that it kind of forces the, on-the-fly decisions, and you don't want your heart rate to go back down while you sit there and let the coaches handle it. That being said, about halfway through this overtime, I was like, you know what, maybe they should give these guys a timeout.
Yeah.
Just let these guys talk.
Maybe, like, disguise it as a water break. Do something.
Right. Got to do something. Somebody run on the field for a minute or something. We just need to kind of cool this down. It was gross. I got to say, I don't love this. It happens a lot. I try to never do it, but I'm going to do it right now. My Ryan Drenner stock is through the roof right now.
You are the original. People, seriously, Chris is the original Ryan Drenner bandwagon driver. There is no one else. He is the guy. It's him and the SID at Towson just hanging out. And now it's a bus. It started out as a little Fiat, and he was just driving. And now, like, you got to get a bus for all these people jumping on it.
Right. Everybody, welcome on board Ryan Drenner hype train. This is just what my man does. Just crushes OT game winners. Awesome sort of a takeover for him. With that two-pointer, just brought the team back. Just to echo what you said there, just super sloppy. Turnover. Maybe some of it was weather affected. I don't know. But, yeah, it was a bit much.
I mean, Gittleman playing a whole game without changing his stick is probably one of the dumbest things I've seen a pro do for a long time. Like, it doesn't work. There's plenty of breaks. Go change the stick out. Have someone else give you a stick, because he couldn't throw with it. Like, Boyle was like basically making fun of him on the broadcast for not being able to throw with it, and he stayed in with it. And it's one of the reasons that they lost. So that's a tough break, but I don't know, man. I think sometimes one of the things that we're seeing, and I alluded to this at least last week, if not the week before, the influence of the coaches is not super high, because the players are, they're men, they're adults, they're treated like that. They're supposed to take care of their own stuff. But I think there was a point where someone had to walk up to Adam and be like, listen, man, can't throw with that. Can't play with that. Like, got to get rid of it. Change it out, please. No shots at his sponsors or anything. It's clearly the rain, and the pocket wasn't designed to perform in the rain. But you got to take that into account. Like, that's why everyone has two sticks. I remember, this is a really bad story time, but I went to my first college practice and I have one stick, and my coach didn't let me on the field. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm, here to practice. And he's like, with one stick? I'm like, well, yeah, you only use one stick. And he's like, go get another one. I'm like, I don't have another one. He's like, well, you're not practicing. Go back to your dorm. Gotta be ready. got to be ready if something breaks or something doesn't work to switch it out. I don't think that's why the Archers lost. I think one of the things that they need to, you know, not fix, but maybe think about is someone else other than Schreiber has to make plays in the different phases of their offense. And again, we saw another kind of struggling, laborious performance from a couple players on that offense. I mean, I was shocked when I looked up. I would think that McIntosh would be on that front line, but it's Ambler, and Ambler actually has good numbers. And I don't remember Ambler doing anything in MLL. And also, he was an attackman, and they're running him out of the box. So I think he's not the problem. I initially thought it was just looking at the roster and going, I don't think that's working. I think their attack is very divided over who's going to be where when. Will Manny barely touched the ball in this game. Kevin Rice got beat to hell for a lot of the game. And they probably should have at least had an exit for him to pass out of, and they didn't. They were all trying to give him a small-sided overload run, and it wasn't happening. So I think some of that stuff can be fixed. But also, don't underestimate the Whipsnakes, because they are not only loaded and deep at every position, they're also huge. Like, this is a huge team, top to bottom. No, like, small guys allowed on the Whipsnakes roster, man. I don't think any other team has the amount of big, fast, young talent that the Whipsnakes have. And the bad part that comes with that is that sometimes they play really stupid. And by that, I mean they choose to go for home run passes instead of the single that's right in front of them. They can hit the single and turn that into a couple runs, but they don't a lot of the time. And that clearly drives Stags insane. Because I don't know if you saw the end of the game. They did a little kind of in the huddle meeting, and the Whipsnakes just won an OT, and everyone's celebrating, and Stags is just standing there like ready to murder someone. And he's like, hey, great victory. Didn't have to be there. Did it, guys. Didn't have to go to OT. You know, like, clearly mad at his team, but, like, knowing that the cameras are there, but still stone-faced and upset. Because, like, why wouldn't you be upset? You should have won. You should have won in regulation. But, again, going back to Archers, I think that their other problem, and this is something that the Whipsnakes really capitalize on, they don't do as well transitioning back to defense from midfield. I don't know if it's their substitution pattern or if their guys were their cycle wasn't large enough or they need to dress one more kind of two-way guy. But that's where the Whipsnakes really caught them and caught them early and kept going at them, not even an early offense, in like 2 seconds into the clock offense. So I think that the good news with that too is that's something that can be fixed. You know, I think a lot of the Archers' problems can be fixed with a couple tweaks and maybe like changing up where the ball goes and getting a little more touches, you know, behind GLE, trying to create something from back there. But you know, I don't think that it makes the Archers look any worse losing an OT game to the Whipsnakes. I think that's kind of the best case scenario, even though the OT was, you know, a mess at best. But really just high level at points in this game, you were just watching unbelievable athleticism from Schreiber. I mean, I don't think he had 3-3. I think he had 3-2, and they gave him a 3 because Holman took like 20 steps through the middle of the field to get his goal. And I'm pretty sure they rewarded Schreiber an assist for that, looking at the numbers. But it was definitely one of the better games of the weekend other than the OT period, and, you know, kind of showcased everything that's great about PLL. Any other thoughts on this before we move on?
Real quick thought just about the Archers offense. I was especially surprised this weekend by how, because you mentioned like initiating from behind GLE, they were spending so much time with their attackmen up by like the 2-point arc.
Yeah.
And they always have like a, you know, like they just stick Marcus Holman up there, or you know, like Will Manny would kind of drift up there as well, or have one of those guys over there. And it seemed contrary to what I would assume would be their strength. I know, like, in years past, we've seen Holman go up there for power plays and situations like that. But just as a, you know, any given time of the game sort of situation, it surprised me and didn't necessarily seem like the best use of their talent.
Yeah, I think one of the things all three of those attackmen do really well, and Rice, Holman, and Manny, is that they are probably three of the best guys that are unafraid to take the extra step to increase their angle to score. And I think that was just kind of trying to maximize their angles and giving them dodging lanes, but they just didn't pull the trigger on that. And a lot of that, you know, can be credited to the Whipsnakes defense, who were happy to switch off of bad matchups into good ones, but not the inverse. And I think that the Archers were probably trying to create a lot of that, and it didn't happen for them because that Whipsnakes defense is very good when they're not chucking the ball once they cross half field. You know, I think they're very good in the six, and they're very hard to score on it. And it did take Schreiber going Super Saiyan to bring that game within striking distance in the first half. So definitely an impressive showing from both teams here. It's kind of tough that the team's got to lose every week. I kind of like, I think some people are having trouble connecting to a team or finding a team. I have watched all these guys play from the beginning of their careers, so it's really not hard for me to like root for different guys. But I see what people are saying about teams. I think you really need to forge your own connection, and kind of now that styles are being established for these teams and kind of ebbs and flows are happening in the league, I think it's going to be a little easier going forward to pick a squad to really root for down the stretch. Let's move on to our final PLL game, and that is the Atlas 13, Chrome 12, not an OT, because the Chrome ran an awful play out of their timeout and chucked the ball away. Also, I can't believe Jordan Wolf has less than 10 touches again. What are we doing? What are we doing? Float him to the wing on every play so he can just walk the ball back. Okay? Just do that. Please. Please. I know Gutterding is already there. How do you think Gutterding's getting the ball? He's running up that high side wing on the opposite side. Just throw Wolf on that other side, please. Honestly, I know he likes to dodge from behind. He can run it back. He can cycle it back. He can pass it back if he gets pressure. I'm losing my mind watching the Chrome's offense. Am I crazy to feel that way?
No, you are not crazy to feel that way.
Okay, good.
I was just hoping that would be the entire sentence. It's just not, am I crazy? And, it always surprises me how rarely we see Jordan Wolf doing things.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe I don't know. Obviously, I don't know as much about coaching professional lacrosse as these gentlemen do who employ Jordan Wolf's skill set. But I would be like, hey, Jordan Wolf, can you breathe? Can you run? Okay, then you're going to run. And I mean, but worst case scenario, he passes out of the, you know, the dodge, and then, you know, the play continues. But I don't understand how he is not, you know, and obviously Tucker Durkin is tremendous and a very scary individual. That being said, if you get a step in any direction, everybody's going to freak out because Jordan Wolf is so quick.
And also, the Atlas don't slide. So who cares? Just go. I don't understand. I don't understand. Like, I don't understand the game plan they went with, but it still worked for other players. Like, Gutterding, so good. And I'm going to give him a really good compliment that's really kind of nerdy. I think he's one of the few players in all professional lacrosse that never overdodges. Ever. Even the best players screw dodge and go in a circle and look to get their hands free because they want a shot. Gutterding doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. Single touch, few steps, boom, ball out, and then he's right into a cut or a pick. He does not have a step of wasted movement. It's seriously incredible. Like, if you were watching just cycle in, you know, they were had the guys mic'd up. If you just watched him in a small circle at the bottom of the screen and what he was doing, you would learn so much about where you're supposed to be as an attackman. Honestly, he's so incredible on and off ball. Like, in the MLO, I was not sold on him in his first couple games because it took him a while to adjust. But again, it's part of his body control and his game IQ are so high that the rest of everything else he does just blends into that. And he is a seriously top five attackman, like, in the world. I'm really impressed with his development in PLL, and also impressed that his skill set fits into PLL. Because I think in MLL last year as a rookie, he was forcing a lot of stuff because he had to, because his team was terrible. So he had to do that. But here, no one's really quote-unquote terrible in the PLL. There are teams that are bad at stuff, and there are teams that are good at stuff. But there are no teams, like, even though, you know, Chrome are 0-3, are the Chrome terrible? No, they're not terrible. They're not executing at the end of games, that's for sure, and that's why they're losing. But they're still in the pocket, throwing punches till the last whistle. So you honestly, one of the most exciting things about PLL for me is, like, you can't sleep on any of these teams. You just can't, you know. And one more Chrome rant. I'm sorry. Yo.
Follow me?
Oh, all right. You need to run the Rattlers lines and dress all the Rattlers guys. I'm sorry to cross the streams here, but the new players, other than Milky Thor, which is my new nickname for him because they call him Thor and the Milkman, I like Milky Thor. We'll put them together. It's pretty cool. I feel like it works.
I prefer that. I like that.
Yeah. No one else is meshing on the lines. Like, they need to play Danowski, Romar, and Berg on one line, and McIntosh, Rannigan, and Crotty on the other. We've already talked about, you literally cannot play Danowski and Crotty on the same line because two black holes don't share the ball. You can have one black hole, but if you put two together, you don't create a universe. You destroy it. You know what I mean? I know the physics on that are really bad, and I messed that up, but you get my point. I just feel like cycle the ball through X, please, and you'll get so much better results. Just touches, more touches. Like, the Chrome just need more touches. And you know which team actually use their touches and realize that they just need more touches instead of dodging into nothingness? The Atlas! That's how they won. Lots of great ball movement. You know, I think Rabel finished with a single point here, but had at least two hockey assists. And could have pulled the trigger a couple of times. You know, I feel like trying to make the best move for the team is something that guys on the Atlas are figuring out now. I think the problematic thing about them is that they're all one-on-one defenders on the other side of the ball. And if they play against a team offense that can move the ball better than the Chrome or anyone else, they get beat. Like, that's how the Chaos beat them. It wasn't just beating them in the middle of the field to all the loose balls. It was the actual, like, positioning of their players and the ball movement that really opened up that run last week. You know, I think Atlas and here, if Jack Concannon doesn't have another great game, they absolutely lose this game because their 1-2 slide doesn't exist. And if it does, it's super late and super bad. And the angle is bad. Like, that whole defense just needs to either play tighter or play like the old school CW post, like, every man is an island defense, where if you get beat, it's your fault. And that's kind of how they're playing, except no one else is in position. So, I don't know. I take good things away from this, and I take bad things away from this for both teams. But again, just like we were talking about with the Whip Snakes and the Archers, it's all very correctable. And I think games are being won in PLL with mistakes, not with execution, because the execution of this level of player is so high that, I don't know about you, when I'm watching games, I'm like, oh man, I can't believe you missed that. You know, if a PLL guy, a midfielder, any midfielder has his feet set with a good look at the net, I feel like he should score, right? Is that crazy?
That's reasonable.
I keep asking if I'm crazy, and I feel like it makes me sound crazier. Because that's like something a crazy person asks all the time. but I do feel that way. I really feel like I'm surprised when it doesn't work. And that to me is like the magic of pro lacrosse. And that's what drew me to it like a decade ago. I was just like, this is awesome. This is so much fun to watch. Like, I can't believe how high level the play is. And that's what we're experiencing in PLL. And we've had like one or two MLO games that are on that level. But PLL putting out a lot of quality here 3 weeks through. That being said, the big question this week, how do we feel about the scuffles and the fighting? Let's go into a little more detail. Chris, I got your initial reaction to the quote-unquote altercation. What do you think about it now that it's been kind of shoved into our faces with the filter of, you know, the outrage of lacrosse Twitter and also the proliferation of the own league pushing out the confrontation? What are your thoughts now, a couple days later?
All right, so let's start with the on-field situation, right? So if we call it a fight, we're definitely doing so with giant, giant air quotes, right? Because I think that's the most important thing right out the gate. Like, none of this was a fight by any sort of sports, you know, precedent or any sort of, you know, on a street precedent. What both situations were, and they're very similar in this regard, were two dudes running up on people who aren't looking at them and tackling them.
Yep.
And that's not, I mean, that's not fighting. That's, if anything, if you do that in another sport, like, because, you know, that's where a lot of this has gone, the conversation afterwards. You say, you know, hey, people fight in this, people fight in that. Yeah, but, like, this is so we'll start with the Joel White situation.
Yeah.
Connor Busick just blasted John Galloway. Clean shot. Just, I mean, he wasn't in the crease. I mean, John Galloway just went flying. Connor Busick's a big boy, played football and stuff.
Yeah.
He just lit him up. And so, I mean, if you have a problem with that, and you're certainly entitled to, you know, Galloway and White are good friends forever, that's fine. But if you're just going to run, I mean, Connor Busick wasn't even like, he wasn't even doing anything at that point. He's looking for the play, and Joel White runs up behind him and tackles him.
Dude, he RKO'd him. He didn't just tackle him. He grabbed him by his head, which, by the way, that's way more dangerous than getting punched in the face with a helmet on and the other guy wearing gloves. I'm going to put that out there. Like, if I had a quote-unquote problem with anything that happened, instead of grabbing him by his helmet, man, like, it's bad. From behind. The neck is not ready for that. That's not good. I that one kind of rubbed me more raw than the other one, but continue.
Yeah, at least I'll say this. At least the other one, which I had a problem with, but at least that was during the confines of some sort of altercation. You know, like Connor Busick's like, you know, just, you know, checking his email or something on his phone. He's just minding his business. There's no pushing and shoving of the sort. The other situation, I'm a little surprised that Blaze Reardon did that, because Blaze Reardon has a box background. You know, he is extensively a box guy, and you're not the third guy in a box confrontation. But, and also, like, and you run up behind somebody and you suplex them.
Yeah.
If this was a league that had a history, and this is the kind of part that's tricky for everyone, this league has no history. They have no precedent for any situations that take place.
Right.
If you run up behind somebody in any other sport and you suplex them, and that guy has been involved in an altercation with somebody else, you know something's going to happen, right? Like, Blaze Reardon knows that if you do that, you're going to have to pay the check, right? Like, something's going to happen. But nothing's going to happen in PLL, as far as we know. You know, they can say, oh, yeah, fighting's allowed. But is that really a situation where they're going to, what, drop gloves and take off their helmets and have a literal fist fight on the middle of the field?
So here's where I can tell you inside information that I don't know if this has been shared to the public, but it was shared to me directly from people in charge of PLL. The fighting rules are, if you take off your equipment and fight, you get ejected. But if you're just like scuffling and stuff, it's like a 5-minute major, like fight, like something like that. And then I saw what happened here and I was like, that doesn't line up with kind of what you told me. But also, it took like 15 minutes to figure out the penalties in the Acello-Reardon thing? That, right, to me, is more egregious than the actual act. Do you know what I mean? And like, there's a... I hate using other sports as comps, but in soccer, they have a new thing called VAR, which is just a video review after goals in big tournaments now. And they can turn things back from a guy being offsides or not based on a video review. And it takes forever, and all the soccer purists hate it. If you're going to put that in lacrosse with reviewing of penalties, it cannot take 10 minutes, man. It cannot take more than 5 minutes to implement. And it was a long time. And they showed that replay at least 5 times. And they probably should have shown it like 2 or 3 times. And it was rough. Like, the more you watch it, the more it doesn't sit well. But that's because the repetition of it, eventually, like, you know, you see different angles of it, and one doesn't look as bad, and the next one's like, ooh, that looks pretty bad. He caught him right on the jaw. But again, he's wearing gloves, he's wearing a helmet. Doesn't hurt that bad. I don't know about you. I've been punched in the face a fair amount. With gloves, without gloves, with a helmet, without a helmet. It hurts a lot more when you don't have a helmet on. And also when you're punching someone without gloves on and they have a helmet on. That hurts. I've done that. That's not good. It's not great. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you, it sucks and it hurts. Don't do it. But they're men. They're pros. They can choose to do whatever they want. And honestly, if you're so... This is my advice to you. If you're so outraged and you think that it totally invalidates everything else the PLL is doing, then peace. Deuces. Like, you don't... No one's, like, forcing you to do anything. I don't get the, like, the outrage on Twitter about it. Like, I know everyone's going to have their opinion, and Twitter is, like, maybe the worst place to have your opinion nowadays. But... you can just vote by not watching and not paying money for tickets, man. Like, you don't, no one's like making you do that. If you don't like it, tell them. But like, I don't understand the shaming of the players or the league or anything like that. Like, you don't need to do any of that. You vote with your wallet, man. That's how you do it. If you really hate it so much and you think it's such a bad example for kids to see, I don't know. I don't buy that argument either. I think it's lazy. I think that's the argument of a lazy person that doesn't want to look at, you know, the real impact of seeing something like that, which is, well, I don't want to get punched in the... When I see someone get punched in the face, I go, I don't really want to get punched in the face. You know, maybe I shouldn't do the thing that got me punched in the face. Right. You know what I mean? I feel like it's a good lesson, actually. I think it's the opposite. Maybe learn from it. I don't know. I do think it's weird that PLL people are clapping back about it when they're the ones pushing it and they made a whole vlog about it. That's a little strange to me. I think that kind of plays like they're playing up the angle to the maximum potential. And I think that's fine. But then when someone does it on the other side, I don't think you get to blow up at them. I think you probably need to meet that with the same amount of like respect that you're being met with, or more respect in a lot of cases than what you're being met with. Because listen, people are like shaming them and all that stuff. I don't think anyone needs to be shamed here. You know, these are two guys that made a decision, and whether it was right or wrong, you can debate about that all day, but everyone's okay, right? I do think the white RKO from behind on Busick was much worse, because that's more dangerous to the player. And I would be more, and that wasn't even really penalized correctly. So I think that's the one I would have an issue with more. But I don't know. How do you feel about how they're kind of policing the narrative?
I agree with you in the sense, like, if, you know, big picture league wise and stuff like that, if you're going to steer into the skid, just steer into the skid.
Yeah.
And by that, I don't mean like, you know, they don't need to do like, you know, WWE style previews for the next time these teams, you know, they don't need to totally go tongue in cheek with it or whatever like that. But I mean, you know, the banner for the final score of the game was of the Acello Reardon situation, you know, I don't know how many times I've seen it since come across my Twitter feed or things like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're definitely embracing the fact that this was a conflict, you know? And a lot of people are seeing this and saying, yeah, well, you know, hey, people get riled up and passionate, and this is them being passionate. And you can subscribe to that notion if you want. You can subscribe to the notion that, like, everybody else who gets passionate in society and doesn't punch somebody, they go about it that way as well. You know, there's not one way that passion is manifested. But at risk of sounding too dismissive, this is clearly, it is what it is as far as they are concerned, as far as the players are concerned. As far as I'm concerned, it wasn't a fight.
Yeah, it's already over. Like,
right, and like you said, if you get ejected, if you take your gear off, okay, so we're not going to see, quote, fights. Now, that being said, it's up to the players to conduct themselves in ways that should not result in a beating. And they're going to have to police themselves in that regard. Because, you know, if you act in a fashion that ordinarily gets your tail whooped, you know, I don't know what's going to happen if you're doing that in a league where you're not allowed to fight. You know what I mean? Like, maybe one of your players is going to get something dirty in their direction. So they're going to have to work that out, but that's on them. And like you said about, you know, if you don't like it, don't watch. You absolutely don't have to watch. You watch something else, or you can root for a team that, you know, you think is a less violent team or something like that. But, you know, like I was saying in the beginning, this is all brand new to all of these people. So they're still figuring out what they want their reputation to be. They're figuring out what this means for their reputation. Maybe it means nothing and we stop talking about it by Wednesday. Or maybe this means something and people start tuning in and saying, yo, I want to see somebody get punched in the face. You know, wherever we go from here is largely up to the degree in which they want to embrace this situation or just let it go, which is also a definite option.
Yeah, I agree. I think whatever is going to get them the biggest return on social is definitely going to be what they do, regardless. So, you know, push it, don't push it, be upset about it. Like, we're not, I'm not telling you to not be upset. I'm saying maybe put a little perspective on it and look at it from a different point of view other than your own. All right, it's time for the recommendation of the week. And Chris, I'm going to go first this week. It's summer. Maybe you're kind of bummed because you don't have a summer league to play in or you only got one game a week and you're trying to feel connected to the sport, but you know, you can't really find that one thing that lets you do that. I'm going to give you a recommendation. Learn how to string. Learn how to string sticks. Right before I jumped on the pod, I finished a 7-diamond single string traditional in a Under Armour Command head, not sponsored, but feel free to sponsor us. And it's such a relaxing, for me, stringing is very relaxing because I can just turn my brain off. And that's kind of what I like to do is clear out before the podcast and get ready. But I know not a lot of people know how to string. And I don't suggest starting with traditional, but it actually is really easy. And you should be able to string your own stick, whether you're, you know, 10 years old or 20 years old, 30, 40, 50, like, it's never too late to learn how to do it, even if you're not playing anymore. You know, even if you don't play at all and you're just a fan, learn how to string, man. It's fun. It's actually like something you can contribute to the community. You know, you can string all the sticks on your youth team as like a nice gesture for them. You know, it's very easy to learn. That YouTube is right there. It's got everything. You know, you do it to like figure out how to change the front headlight on your car. You might as well do it and utilize that resource of YouTube to figure out how to string sticks. So my recommendation of the week is learn how to string sticks. Just plug it into the Google machine, hit some YouTubes, and give it a try. Your first 5 will be terrible. I'm going to warn you. Don't get upset. Your first 5 sticks, no matter who you are going to be awful. But if you stick with it, it's a lot of fun and a skill that grows and evolves over time. And I think everyone should give it a try at least once. Chris, what's your recommendation?
So, yeah, I think, first of all, I think yours is a great recommendation. I do not know how to string sticks, but I should learn how. My recommendation is a little bit different. It is a documentary I saw on PBS. Now, PBS has this series of documentaries. They're like an hour long, and they're called My Wild Affair. And I don't know why they're called that, because that's a weird thing to call something.
Pretty salacious for PBS, I'm not going to lie to you.
I know, and it's just about animals. It's about, which is why they shouldn't call it.
Even worse. But, I'm gonna go with that's even worse.
Right. There's going to be a lot of disappointed people tuning in. But, so it's just these stories about, like, people who have, like, friendships with animals. This one guy hung out with a penguin. Every year, the penguin would migrate and then go, you know, see the guy. Be like, hey, what's up? Remember me? And they would hang out. But this one in particular that I saw the other day that I recommend everybody check out is called The Ape Who Went to College. See, now that's a title.
That's a title.
That gets you going.
I'm in.
So, quick summary. I don't want to give too much away here. But, so in the 70s, this woman who worked at a college, this professor, thought it would be a good idea to get an orangutan and raise it like a baby. And she wanted to see what would happen. Because, like, I don't know, this was just the thing in the 70s. I wasn't there, but it was just like disco, kung fu movies, and teaching apes sign language and stuff like that. And like she saw like Coco the gorilla, and Coco had like a pet cat and knew sign language, and she was like, I could do that with an orangutan. So she gets an orangutan, takes it to college, and raises it like a kid. And the whole study is to see if you take an orangutan out of, you know, orangutan town, and you just put it in human world, how far it really is going to evolve. Like, if it can actually be like a person. And so, you know, taught it sign language, it learns, you know, human ways, it learns currency, it learns, like, a billion different words, it learns how to manipulate the English language for words it doesn't know. Like, it didn't know ketchup, but it knew tomato toothpaste, so it starts calling ketchup tomato toothpaste, because orangutans are really smart like that. Obviously, there are highs and lows, as you would expect from raising an orangutan in human world, but it is pretty awesome, and I don't want to tell you too much about what happens, because it's amazing, and you will laugh and cry, and probably won't actually cry, but your sad stuff and happy stuff, and it's just mind-blowingly incredible how smart this orangutan was. So I would recommend you check that out. It's on PBS during their pledge drives and all that stuff. Or if you really, really want to see it immediately, it's on YouTube, but you have to pay like $6 for it. So Ape Who Went to College is my recommendation of the week.
I want to follow that up after having not seen that documentary with then go watch Congo. And then make the Amy want green drop drink joke like 400 times, because every time I've seen Congo, it's all I've done. It's an Congo has an animatronic gorilla that loves martinis. I just and the movie ends with lasers. I just sold Congo to a whole new audience. Where is my check?
Yeah, get some of that Crichton money.
Yeah. Give me some of that Crichton money. All right. That will do it for the third week of the IL Pro Lacrosse podcast. You can find me on Twitter at the Kyle Devitt. Chris, where can they find you?
@ChrisRosie22.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.